Hi, and welcome back to another episode of ABA Mom. I'm your host, Allie, mom of five and BCBA. And today I have Catherine Karpinski, who is also a fellow BCBA and has her own business as an independent consultant with the Joy Advantage right here in Palm Coast, Florida. Catherine, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me on, Allie.
Yeah, of course. So today we're going to dive into a topic. We're going to talk about 504 plans and just some of the process of getting a 504 plan, and then also some of the dangers of losing a floor plan. Well, Catherine, can you just briefly share a 504 plan, like what it is and its purpose in supporting students with disabilities?
Sure. A 504 plan comes from the Section 504 of the 1973 law, the Rehabilitation Act of 1973. Now, this was a civil rights law meant to give people with any kind of disability access to any institution that receives government funding. So this includes employers that receive government funding and public schools. So in the context of education, a 504 plan supports any child who needs a special support without specialized instruction. So the difference between an IEP, which is an individualized education plan, and Section 504 plan is how many resources are allocated to specialized instruction. If the student does not need specialized instruction, such as a self-contained classroom, then a 504 plan may be the right fit to support that student.
I think that's a great way to explain it too, because I do get a lot of parents that ask me, you know, what's kind of the difference between the IEP and 504 plan. So thank you for clarifying that. I think that is very informative and very important to a lot of families that we serve as well. What kind of disabilities typically qualify for a floor plan, and how does it differ from an IEP? So you kind of just went into like some of the goals, but is there like specific disabilities and how it might differ from an IEP plan?
Sure. An IEP plan has a very specific list of 13 qualifying disabilities. So this might range from autism to other health impairment to specific learning disability. There's 13 qualifying disabilities. And a 504 plan may be any disability or medical or health condition that impacts learning. So a 504 plan is a little more broad spectrum. And also, a student with a 504 plan does not need specialized instruction. So a typical child on a 504 plan can access the general curriculum, has a typical IQ usually, and can do well and succeed in the school as long as they have some specialized supports. Now, this could be the student with ADHD who needs special accommodations like extended time on tests or preferred seating, but it also could be a student who has a metabolic condition like IBS, and that student needs extra breaks to go to the bathroom or the ability to take assignments home if they're having an inflammation flare-up in their digestive system and needs to take a break. So that student may be perfectly intelligent and have no problem doing the work, but they need a little extra time to accommodate their body's needs.
I love how you address that too with the IBS, because that's very interesting. I've never even thought of that as a disability that might be on a 504 plan. So that's very interesting. Thank you for sharing that piece. Out of five kids, so two of mine, I have two on 504 plans, both with an ADHD diagnosis. And then I have one that has an IEP. And there, you know, a lot of that is because the diagnosis is different. It looks different. The school, you know, the way that, you know, the two that have the 504 plan, it's more accommodations. They just need more frequent breaks because of the ADHD diagnosis. They have, you know, extended time on their tests, things like that, but it's been very helpful for them in school. But lately there's been a lot of discussion about 504 plans being in danger. Can you elaborate on specific threats these plans are currently facing?
Yes, the 504 plan is currently facing a legal threat. Is a lawsuit from 19 different states challenging whether a 504 plan should even exist. Now, this is an ongoing pattern of the current political climate rolling back civil rights legislation, calling it leveling the playing field for everyone. But the whole point of the 504 plan is to give students a more level playing field. And we saw this in the 1970s, where disabilities rights advocates took over City Hall in San Francisco in 1977 to make sure that people and students were getting their rights addressed, that they had the ability to access government services, including a free and appropriate public education, FAPE, in the context of having a more level playing field for people and students with disabilities. Now, rolling back some of these rights are going to impact students with all sorts of needs. And this isn't leveling the playing field.
Right.
This is rolling back protections that people fought for 40, 50, 60 years ago. And we see that we have to keep this fight going.
No, I completely agree. You know, one thing too, when I was kind of getting into this field, that somebody A great way that somebody explained this to me as far as leveling the playing field is that, you know, I sometimes teachers, parents might say, you know, they get these special accommodations. Why doesn't my kid get that? You know, and we're just talking about a general education student that doesn't necessarily need those accommodations. Like, why does this kid get special treatment? Mm-hmm. But, you know, if you can swim, then you can swim. But some of us need a float, right? Some of us need some extra assistance. So if we're able to get there, we have to be able to have that extra support sometimes for certain kiddos. So not everyone learns differently. And definitely those accommodations make a huge difference in these kids' life. I've seen it in my own personal kids' lives, just being able to have that extended time, the breaks, the, you know, my son, my older son that's in high school, he even listens to music sometimes, like during non-instructional time, and it definitely helps him focus during independent work. So there's lots of things that has helped kids. So it's really, you know, I definitely, what you said, it's not like really everybody can't think and do things the same way. So it's definitely not everyone's on the same playing field if we take some of that away. So I think that's very important to address, and that it's not the same for everyone.
Yeah. For example, I worked with a little girl who has PDD-NOS, which is a very, very mild form of autism, and childhood anxiety. We found out that this little girl was eating her lunch hiding in the bathroom because she was so overwhelmed by the sounds and the noises in the cafeteria. So once we identified this problem that she was having, this like sensory overwhelm, we found a really simple solution. She was able to take her lunch either to the office or the nurse's office or the library so that she had a warm and welcoming space to eat her lunch and she wasn't hiding in the bathroom.
I love that too. Yeah. It's so needed too. And it's such a simple, like easy solution, but it's like, you know, it just looks a little different than maybe everybody else. Right. Cause most kids can eat in the cafeteria, but that doesn't apply to everyone.
And for that child to have a better experience in her school, you know, she's more able to learn. She's more ready to face the afternoon, you know, fully fed and relaxed and ready to go if she's eaten lunch in the library instead of cowering in the bathroom. And this was a very simple accommodation that was put in her 504 plan. And so also next year when she shows up, she doesn't have to go through the same process over again, fighting for something that will help her. She has this accommodation in place. So she moves from elementary school to middle school, middle school to high school. Her teachers know that this simple accommodation really helps her performance for the rest of the day.
Yeah. And I think that's amazing. And it's such an important tool, because you're right too. It doesn't just end, like, it's not just, hey, so this year it's over, we had these accommodations, she has to go through the same thing. Like, it follows her. So I love that you address that as well. What are some legal implications for school when it comes to providing services under the 504 plan?
Well, all schools are legally required to provide a free and appropriate public education. That's a very important concept, and that's been enshrined in IDEA, which is the Special Education Law of the Land. That is a federal law. So having a 504 plan is part of having a free and appropriate public education. In the state of Florida, what tends to happen is if you have an IEP plus a 504 plan, the 504 plan gets kind of absorbed into the IEP, and any of the accommodations such as extended testing, modified materials, note takers, preferred seating. Sometimes it's like having an accommodation tool. Maybe that's to help with writing or penmanship. Sometimes that's movement breaks. All of those things that are in the 504 plan can be included in an IEP. So you see that students don't tend to have both at the same time.
Right.
They tend to have one or the other. You might also see when a child is mainstreamed out of an IEP, they may transition to a 504 plan where they no longer need specialized instruction. They've made enough progress in their academic achievement that they no longer require specialized instruction. A 504 plan may still give them access. Let's say you have a student with ADHD who was in special education and then gets mainstreamed in the second grade because they're academically doing well. Perhaps the parents put them on a medication that's working well. Sometimes children go on medication and that changes their need. And a 504 plan may be the more appropriate tool for that child's education. So you may still have some things in place, such as extended time or a self-management system. Those can be very helpful for children with ADHD. It carries over into the 504 plan so that the child can have the supports they need to be successful in the general ed curriculum.
And I like how you address that too, that you know, you can kind of go back and forth between the IEP and the 504 plans, even if it's, you know, they no longer have an IEP. They're not just, you know, thrown into general education with no support at all, that they can still have that support with the 504 plan.
And it's generally encouraged, if it's right for the student, to move to the least restrictive environment. Right. So least restrictive environment means the child only gets the services that are appropriate for their level and really no more, no less. So the school is not required to go above and beyond. And if a 504 plan meets the student's needs, then it's appropriate to transition out of the IEP.
So what are the recent legislative changes proposed for policies that could impact the future of the 504 plans?
So the lawsuit that is claiming that 504 plans are discriminatory, we'll see how that shakes out, because that's a very important piece for special education. There's also a movement to close the Department of Education, and that's going to greatly impact the funding for students with special education. And if that funding gets shifted to the Department of Health and Human Services, that's going to shake up public education. So we're not quite sure what that's going to look like. But what we're seeing with the rolling back of some of these educational supports is there's more funding being shifted to private schools, to charter schools, and that's also going to impact what's available for public education. Now, there's an argument that, you know, the schools can't really afford to take care of all of these students with severe needs. You know, some of the questions are, what do you do if you have a student who has very severe needs and can't be accommodated by the regular school? There are students who, let's say, have leukemia and are in the hospital. The public school is still required to provide that child with a public education, whether or not that child is in the hospital. And there's been some pushback of who's responsible for funding the education of the neediest students. And the federal government has always supported these high-need students. And this is some of the funding that's in jeopardy with these lawsuits. So we're watching the space very carefully. What's happening to some of these funding mechanisms through the federal government, how it's going to be shifted to the state's departments of education, and how that's going to impact local funding.
What are your final thoughts or advice you give for parents who are trying to navigate the 504 plan process, and maybe even just new parents that, you know, just got a diagnosis for their child and they're trying to navigate what that process looks like?
Sure. So it has to be a collaborative process. It really, really matters that you have a good relationship with the school staff, because oftentimes these are unfunded mandates. You might have a third grade teacher and they have 4 students with IEPs and 7 students with 504 plans in a class of 25. That is a lot to take care of. That's a lot to keep track of. So making sure that you have a great relationship with the teachers and understand that it's only going to get done if it's doable. So that load of the teacher has to be doable, and you're trying to set everybody up for success. You want the student to be set up for success. You want the teacher, the teacher's aides, all of the involved stakeholders to have a in the process, as well as looking for that win-win-win. Look for the win for the child, the staff, and the family.
And I love that too, that you're saying that collaboration too, because I find, you know, in a lot of those meetings, whether it's a 504 or an IEP meeting or just meeting with the school in general, it's just really nice that the parents know that they have a voice too, that they're one of the most important voices, and that, you know, it's very important to be collaborative. So I think that's a huge part of, you know, I feel like what we do and just being a part of it and what's best for the child.
Yes. Yes.
Well, thank you, Catherine, so much for today. I appreciate you coming on, and thank you for sharing your insight on 504 plans.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
All right. And listeners, if you like this episode, make sure that you like and subscribe. And remember, you are not alone on this journey.